Well, welcome to Hetaireia Hellenis Greek Club. I had to look up the word for club. And we are reading Matthew, Gospel according to Matthew, and we are going to pick up in chapter 1. Last week we read genealogy, which went very quickly. And then I believe we had covered through verse 20. And so we'll pick up at Matthew chapter 1, verse 21. And so here we go. These are still the words of the angel to Joseph. And the angel continues and says, Texetai de huyan, kai kaleses ta anima autu yezun, autoskar sose tan laon autu apaton hamarteon auton. The first verb is from ticto. The second principal part, that is the future indicative, is deponent, which is why you've got a tie ending on there. So it just translates with an active force. And welcome, come on in. We got seats here. I don't know what we're going to do if anybody else shows up. Oh, that chair is good. Good problem.
You might want to wipe those two chairs off. They've had something on them.
So we'll just carry on here as we're adjusting the group, which is good. So in context, the third singular tie ending has as the subject she, because again, only a woman can ticto something. She will bear a son. And then you can make something of this theologically, although we won't tarry over that. Kaleses is from kaleo, epsilon contract verb. And the normally in an epsilon contract, once you leave the first principal part, the stem epsilon lengthens to eta, and you add sigma for the stem. In this, with kaleo, it simply stays an epsilon. So kales is the weak era, it could be the weak era stem, but here it's the future stem, and then it's just o ace a, so it's second singular active. So you, Joseph, will call the name of him Jesus. Now, kaleo is one of these verbs that naturally takes two accusatives. So the name is the direct object, and then it takes that's the object, and then it takes a complement. This is what Daniel Wallace calls an object complement, double accusative, and translates just as it does in English, very natural. You will call his name Jesus. And then the angel tells Joseph why, with a gar clause. You may remember that the third person personal pronoun, autos, aute, auta, in the nominative is unnecessary because you got the third singular in the verb. So whenever you see it, it tends to be emphatic. So that's the way it probably should be translated here. Autos is not just for he will save, but he himself will save. Sose is just from sozo, just the future indicative. Active, third singular. For he himself will save the people of him, his people, apa ton hamarteon auton, from the sins of them or from their sins. If you were going to label the so-called force of the genitive at the very end, auton, you might call this a subjective genitive because sins is a verbally based noun, you know, to sin. So to say their sins means they are sinning. So if you were going to go through that routine, that's probably the way you would do it. And that brings the angel's words to Joseph to a close, and then the evangelist's voice kicks in at verse 22.
Question.
Yes, any questions?
How did you translate texetai de huyan?
She will bear a son.
She will bear a son. Can be translated as son. There will be born a son.
Well, you're seeing a middle passive ending, right? Kai?
Yeah.
Yep. But again, the second principal part, male, is deponent. So even though parses is a future indicative middle, so if you look at the principal part, it goes ticto, texamai, etekon. So it's middle in form, but active in meaning. And then when you parse huion, it parses as masculine singular accusative. So it's the object. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. He who parses lives, he who does not parse dies. Yeah, that's an old Greek proverb that I just made up. Yeah. I wonder how you say that in Greek. I'll ask Vels about that. He would probably know. So yeah. Yeah, the other proverb that actually does apply to learning and using Greek is pathe mathos, which it translates by means of suffering, learning. So, yeah, and I can laugh at that because I don't have to worry about grades. But in this group, you don't either, right? So this is all good. So, good. Other questions about anything at all about verse 21? Again, Greek is like a puzzle. You have to put the pieces together, you know. And Gibbs's fourth rule is, if you can't figure out what it means you probably misparsed something. That's what I do. I go back and I go, oh, yeah, it's not dative, it's accusative or whatever. So, okay, verse 22. This is the evangelist kicking in, and this is actually the first 10 times the evangelist will say something very much like this formula. So reading verse 22, and maybe we'll go ahead and do 23 as well. Tuta de halan geganen hina plerothe ta presen hypokiriu dia tu prophetu legantas. Idu he parthenos en gastri hexe kai texitai huion kai kalesusen ta anima otu Emmanuel. Ha esten meth er me nu aminon methemon ha theos. So back to verse 22. Who can spot for me the dictionary verb from which geganen comes? What verb is that from?
Ginomai.
Right, ginomai. It's actually a perfect indicative active. It's a strong form, but at least you can see a duplication on the geg. So the subject of that verb is this thing, referring back to what the angel had just talked about, what happened. And then halon is just modifying this. So this whole thing has happened. And now a purpose clause. And this is, sometimes it's just called the citation formula in Matthew, because it occurs 10 times. In order that, now the verb, in a hina clause, of course, you'd expect a subjunctive. And that's what we have. Plerothe is from what verb? Anybody? Plerao, right? And because it's omicron contract, that explains why you've got an omega. And then you can kind of sort of spot the theta eta. This verb actually parses as aorist subjunctive passive, third singular. And the subject is, in the simplest form, ta hrethen. Now, hrethen is a form that you'd probably have to pray and fast over. Does anybody have a clue what verb it's from? Okay, we're eating lunch, so we're not fasting. It's actually from Lego. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Yeah, oh, yeah. No, the sixth principal part of Lego is erethane. Yeah, so...
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's right.
As the commercial says, don't try this at home, I'm a professional. Yeah, it's actually from Lego, I say. So, and this is the aorist participle passive, neuter, singular, nominative. Could be accusative. So it would go hrethes, hrethesa, hrethen. That would be the masculine, feminine, neuter. So again, don't worry, I do it for a living, right? And it's the subject. The having been spoken thing. That's how you would translate it, wouldn't you? Might be fulfilled. Remember that the subjunctive verb is passive. So in order that the having been spoken thing might be fulfilled. And now let's modify the having been spoken thing. It's having been spoken by the Lord. It's having been spoken through the prophet. Legantes, as the prophet says. Or something like that. And then we get the quotation from Isaiah 7, chapter 14. So it takes a while to put all those pieces together. But again, the simplest form of the henna clause would be just the first three words after henna, in order that the thing spoken might be fulfilled. Okay? Any questions about verse 22 at all? Anything at all? There's a ton of parsing that sort of has to go on in there, but we got it done. Okay, good. And then we have the citation from Isaiah 7. We have Yadu, which again is functions in Matthew kind of as an interjection, like look or behold. It actually is an imperative, but it's kind of lost its, I mean, it's like hey, you know. And Matthew does like to use it, and he's happy that the Septuagint has it here. So, look, the Parthenos, the virgin, in stomach will have. This is the hexaeus, the future of echo. You get a rough breathing mark in the second principal part. It just kind of appears. So the virgin will have in stomach, will be pregnant, and then we have our friend Texitai again, and she will bear, again, a middle form, but active in meaning, she will bear a huion, a son, and surprisingly, a lot of discussion about this, we won't go into it, kalesusen, they will call. Not you, not she, not him, but they. And there's all kinds of variant readings because the scribes are trying to figure that out because it disagrees both with the Masoretic text and with the Septuagint. But grammatically, it's just a future indicative, active, third person plural. Oase mente use, right? So a future indicative active. And they will call the name of him Emmanuel. Once again, the object complement after kaleo. So you have the direct object is name. It's the object of kalesusen, and then the complement is Immanuel, which St. Matthew feels the need to translate, which is being translated. Meth er main uo, this is the present participle passive, neuter singular nominative, and it's with estin. Who remembers what it's called when you got the linking verb and a participle right lurking close there, and they kind of go together? What kind of that's called a periphrastic construction. A periphrasis is just a roundabout way of doing something. Okay, and Hellenistic Greek likes to do this more than classical Greek did, and you just translate it kind of like an English linking verb ing word. They're actually usually pretty easy to translate. Just translate the linking verb. It's present or perfect, whatever it is, and then do the ing word. So, which is passive, being translated, meth hemon ha theos. God is with us. So, one kind of, maybe I'll just kind of mention this because you want to do a little bit of exegesis. People routinely point to brackets around the Gospel of Matthew, and most people agree, and I think it's probably right. But here at the beginning we have Jesus as Emmanuel, God is with us. And then at the end, the very last verse we have, I am with you. See? And so people often see that as a kind of very deliberate sort of bracketing. So in a sense you've got Jesus first and Jesus last in his identity as God who is with us. So, yeah, it's a nice thing. So, good. Any questions about verse 23?
With the variant reading?
Yes.
Does that change the Isaiah text back to what the Isaiah...
On Kalesusen, Mike?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, take a look down. There's actually a grammatical difficulty in the Hebrew verb can be taken more than one way. It's a kind of an odd form. The grammars actually discuss it. But yeah, the Kaleses, if I'm remembering right... you will call reflects the Septuagint, right? Yeah, and of course this is a greatly debated passage, you know, on all sorts of levels.
Is there a concise Greek New Testament, or any? How could we get that? It doesn't appear in my critical apparatus either.
Do you have the UBS edition?
Well, this is the third edition.
Yeah. Right. It's in Nestle Aland. Yeah. Yeah, the UBS edition has more extensive information on the notes that are there, but it has fewer notes. Yeah. So, and by the way, it's always good to remember, and I say this so Professor Cole will like me, that that even in the critical apparatus in Nestle Aland, this is a bare summary of the data that are out there in terms of the manuscript readings. So, but now to make Professor Cole hate me, it's very good news that most of the variant readings don't make any difference whatsoever. Okay. Okay. So. And he lives next door, so we play dueling lawnmowers. Good. Anything else on verse 23? Okay, very good. Verse 24. Now we get the narrator continues, St. Matthew continues, and he starts out with participle, egerthes. Anybody from what dictionary form? Egeiro or egeiro, very good. And it's a kind of a funny form, but the thes ending might look like an aorist participle passive, which is what it is. And if it looks like that, that's what it is. So literally, being raised. Okay. I'll say this fast, and if it just kind of goes past you here, that's fine. A lot of verbs in Greek, in their passive forms, end up not having a true passive meaning, but they shift from a transitive to an intransitive sense. And so in this case, in English it works as well. It's the difference between to raise something, like I raise the object, to I rise. And so the passive forms of egeiro or egeiro readily come to mean not I, for instance, was raised by someone, but simply I rose. And that's probably what's happening here. It's probably not somebody got Joseph up, but just literally getting up. And we have then da, which is post-positive, which is why it's in second position, but you translate it first. So, and, literally getting up Joseph from the sleep, epoiesen, he did hos pros etoxen autoha angelos kiriu kai par eleben tain ginaika autu. So getting up Joseph getting up from sleep did like or as the angel of the Lord, pros etoxen. This is from pros tasso, and the epsilon in between the pros and the basic stem is the temporal augment. Now this is an aorist, indicative, active, third singular with a movable nu. As the angel of the Lord, angel is nominative, so it's the subject, directed, and then you direct someone in the dative, which is why you have auto. So this is a great example. You got the subject last, you got the verb first, you got the object. You got all, this is why you got, it's pars or die. Yeah, the word order doesn't help you at all, right? Just not at all, yeah. And this is why, Greek is a thinking person's language, right? As the angel of the Lord directed him. And, kai, par elaben, from what dictionary form? Para lambano, very good, right? This is just the aorist, indicative of para lambano, third singular with a movable nu. And he took along the wife of him. If you were here last week, you might remember we made the point that Mary was already Joseph's wife, legally and culturally. It's just that they hadn't begun to cohabit, and they certainly hadn't had sexual relationship yet. Well, this verse kind of shows that. It doesn't say he took her to be his wife. It just says he took his wife. Mary was already his wife in every way except the engaging in sexual relations. So he took his wife, dot, dot, dot. So that's verse 24, so we should stop there. Oh, I thought I'd say a word about, go back to the beginning of the verse. This aorist participle, egerthes, it's aorist passive. This is a pattern that you see a lot in the Gospels. And here's the pattern. Daniel Wallace, this is going to sound bizarre, I know the page number, 640 to 645. Listen, I'm great at a lot of exegetical studies. This is what he calls the attendant circumstance participle. Okay. And here's the pattern. Aorist participle that precedes the verb, and the verb is usually an aorist indicative or an imperfect indicative. And he calls them attendant circumstance. Anybody have Veltz for summer Greek? This is Veltz's bang bang participle.
Yeah, bang bang.
Okay. Where you just, it's like the participle just kind of, Wallace called it, piggybacks. So it would be working too hard to say, after he got up, Joseph did. Or because he got up, Joseph did. It's kind of like he had to get up. He couldn't do it lying flat on his back. See? And so the participle just sort of piggybacks onto the main verb, and you just translate it as if it were the same thing as the main verb. So just, he got up and did. And again, this attendant circumstance participle, it occurs a lot in historical narratives, which is why I know what page it's on. In the big green grammar. So, and we'll actually see a couple more pretty soon when we get into chapter 2. So, but when in doubt, you know, when you see a participle and it's predicate position, the way this one is in relation to Joseph, right? Because Joseph is the referent of the participle, agrees in gender, number, and case. If you don't know what else to do, just do the so-called dreaded weasel translation with Dr. Bell's, where you just ing it. So, getting up from sleep, Joseph did. And at this point, you're in the ballpark. You may be stranded out in center field, but you're in the ballpark. And for those who have had Dr. Vells, chasing the weasel, right? Good. Anything else on verse 24? Okay, 25 finishes off the chapter. There's a nice verb form here. So I'll read it first, verse 25. Kai uk egenosken autain heos hu etiken huion kai ekalisen ta anima autu yezun. Now, who can tell me, who might try to parse for me that verb egenosken? Go ahead, Ben.
Third singular imperfect.
It's third singular active, and it's not aorist, it's imperfect. It's got the so-called present stem, genosk, with a temporal augment on the front, right? So, and this is an example where a little bit of Greek can kind of pay off, because I think the English versions, and it's not like they're wrong, but I think they typically translate it as if it were an aorist indicative. They just say, he did not know her. But it's an imperfect. He kept on not knowing her. I mean, really, there's some theology in that.
Yes.
See?
Yeah.
Now, my doctor father wants to translate this. He didn't even try to know her. And that would be what's called a conative imperfect. Okay, it's actually in the grammars. Go ahead, Mark.
Does this then follow closer to what the Catholics say, that Mary was a virgin until she died?
Well, not until we get to the until clause, actually. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and we'll get to that in just a second.
Okay.
But no, this simply is, you know, a way of affirming, you know, the birth of Jesus from a virgin.
Okay.
Right, so he kept on not knowing her until, right? See? So it's a great example, actually, because, you know, as you know, sometimes you do all this time slogging through Greek and there's not much payoff. You just kind of come up with what you already had in the ESV or something, you know. Although virtue, of course, is its own reward. But this is actually an example where most of the time the English versions, and I don't know why, they simply don't reflect the ongoing sense that the imperfect, you know, can readily have. So, Joseph kept on not knowing her. And now, Mark, we actually get to the question of Mary after the birth of Jesus. Until eteken, this is from Tikto, temporal augment, third principal part is etekon. So this is aorist indicative, active, third singular with a movable nu. Until she bore a huion, a son, accusative object. And he, Joseph, just because the angel told him to do it. At Colossae, he called the name of him Jesus. Now, the question that always comes up here is, does the until clause imply that after she bore the son, then Joseph did begin to know Mary, his wife, sexually? And the answer is, the grammar can actually go either way. You can't prove it one way or the other just from the grammar. And I know this because, and yes, you're right, Mel, I do need a life. I've looked up all the until clauses in the New Testament. Okay, and it doesn't always pan out one way or the other. Okay, so you can't prove either position just from the grammar alone. You'd have to take other factors into account.
Yeah. Would you repeat that again?
Does the statement he kept on not knowing her until she bore a son, does that imply that after she bore a son, Joseph did know her sexually, right? And the answer is grammatically, it doesn't imply it one way or the other. Right. Right. So, and again, we could go to Matthew 13 and talk about the brothers of Jesus and stuff like that.
When did they have their actual wedding ceremony?
Yeah, Mel asked, when did they have the wedding ceremony? There's not enough data to tell us if there was kind of a set period, you know, between legal marriage, betrothal, and the big village-wide party and the sexual consummation. We just don't have enough data for what's going on in Palestine in the first century. Yeah, we just don't know.
Probably not until after Jesus was born.
Well, that's a good question, actually.
You wouldn't think they'd have one at all after that.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, they're moving to Bethlehem and all the rest of that stuff that's going on. Maybe nothing could never happen.
Yeah, and that's another. Yeah, these two chapters are great because all these questions come up. You know, how do we fit this together with Luke chapter 1 and 2 and so forth? The great thing is this is Greek Club. So if you want to see a recently published opinion about how this all fits together, you can kind of like buy someone. Yeah. Yeah.
When you tie Psalm 69 into this picture, if you buy that as alluding to Christ,
right,
then it paints a picture that he bore shame growing up, doesn't it?
Right.
I was the song of drunkards. I was the illicit one.
Yep.
You know, so paraphrase.
I actually think that's going on at the end of Matthew 2. He will be called a Nazarene. But that's another topic. And we're at the end of a chapter. Isn't that neat? So we will pick up next week chapter 2, verse 1.
The variant reading prototokon.
Yes.
What is this?
Prototokon means firstborn.
Okay.
Yep. Which is orthodox, but probably an addition.
Right. No, I was just kind of guessing.
Yeah.
Take out that whole, he knew or not. Yeah,
let's see how this works.
Right, there's a mission there that some of the translations say, and he didn't know her.
Right.
That was
right. Well, and they added, let's see.
And then they added the son of him. Or his son. She bore his son.
Right. Let's see, that's added at the dog leg.
I know.
Right before.
Yeah. So that would read, she bore her firstborn son. Right. Right. Which is probably harmonized from Luke.
Right?
Yeah, so. Where's Chloe when we need him, right?
Yeah.